My name's Scott Redmond. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Thank you, the committee, for allowing me to come. My sponsor was supposed to be here today, and a family thing came up and prevailed, and the committee was kind enough to allow me to step in for him, and I think he owes me. I think he owes me a little bit. If you know him, his name's Bob B. If you run into him, you could say, you might mention, I think he owes Scott, you know. If it comes up. And I'm completely sleep-deprived. I haven't felt this way in, probably since 1976. I mean, I'm just I'm a little tired, a little dingy. So I'm sorry. And I feel a red dot dancing across my forehead. And, can I see the hands of everybody in their first year? Wow! Welcome. That's great. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're an alcoholic, if you're a drug addict, welcome to AA. If you're a dope fiend, which is somehow worse than any of us, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Buddy of mine a while ago heard a guy identify as a crack monster. Ooh. Yikes. That's scary. Crack monster. I wonder if they have like a Halloween costume for crack monster. And I want to welcome, I'm especially very excited about this new group that's kind of been filtering in AA. I'd like to welcome any tweakers that are here today. So welcome. There he is. He has no idea why he's clapping. He's completely forgotten. They just start looking at their hands. But I like you guys. You stay quick for a while, you know, and every part of their face is moving in a different direction. They're cool. I'm not making fun of you, but I'm coming pretty close. And I'm not making fun of you. Just catch alcoholism. We don't care what you've got. I don't care if you're like the Bigfoot of dope addicts, like a dope Goliath, you know. Just catch the dreaded alcoholism. I did not have alcoholism when I came to AA. I caught alcoholism in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I didn't have it. I have a terrible case. It's getting my, as a matter of fact, my alcoholism is getting worse. Hopefully not during this meeting, but... but I didn't. I could not have possibly been alcoholic. I'm Jewish, and Jews don't drink. Because it might dull the pain. And, yeah. You don't want to squander any agony opportunity, you know. One of the first guys who ever saved my life in AA, at my first home group, the Edge of the World group, that's what my name for it. This guy, I was in the first couple weeks of sobriety, and this guy identified, he said, I'm an ex-Catholic, which means I don't believe in God, and I'm therefore positive God is going to come kill my ass for feeling that way. And I said, I'm going to sit right next to him, because that's exactly how I felt. I'm going to talk on a topic today. It's a little different than what's on the program. I'm not going to talk about how you should pursue your dreams. I'm going to tell you how I've pursued my dreams. I'm going to talk about how I've implemented the steps. You know, I've always, with workshops, I know I wasn't supposed to use the W word, but this is a talk with a topic. If you call a workshop like sex in sobriety, everybody shows up, you know, and or relationships, or, you know, and I always wanted to kind of call one sex in sobriety, and when everybody shows up, say, you know, I'm really in the mood to talk about the concepts. I really don't want to talk about sex in sobriety. Someone asked me if I was against same-sex marriages, and I said, I'd actually just like a some-sex marriage. That would be just fine with me. I'm an alcoholic. I got a bad case of it, and I was brought up in the Bronx in New York City to a completely insane family. My wife never believed me about my family until she met him, and my mom threw an engagement party for us, and my Aunt Rose came and wore her wig backwards. And it had a bun on it. So the bun was like right in the front of her head. And they're psychotic. You could throw a net over any constellation of them. There was chronic institutionalization and suicide attempts and mental and physical abuse and stupidity. A lot of stupidity. And my family didn't have one single solitary thing to do with making me an alcoholic. And I'm not saying that a lot of damage didn't get done, but they couldn't. I have a strange physical reaction to alcohol. I can't control and enjoy or moderate once I begin. And if you're special and a drug addict, try some controlled crack smoking. just fill your mouth up with crack smoke and say I'm not in the mood and blow it out. And hats will fill the air, I guarantee it. And it was real bad, and I have this weird physical allergy, and it gets touched off by this fascinating thinking. It's referred to as alcoholic thinking. It's the source of a lot of mirth in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and I still have it. That's why I do more now in AA than I've ever done before, than when I was new. That's why the guys who I hang out with, one of my heroes in AA, are those guys that are just doing more. They don't have to do more when things get bad, because they're already doing more. A couple of years ago, I was 14 years sober, and I had to get surgery on my hand. And the doctor said, you know, Mr. Redmond, you're going to need general anesthetic. And I said, oh, general anesthetic. This is great. Normal people don't get excited about general anesthetic. There's no normal person that goes, oh, general anesthetic. But I know something about general anesthetic. When they hit you with it, they say count backwards from 100. And you go, 100, 99. I love 99. I love 99. The difference is because I'm being treated at Alcoholics Anonymous, I won't trade my life in for 99 anymore. And what happened to me is I kept thinking my way into a drink. I couldn't stop taking it, I started to develop this cancer of the soul, this spiritual tapeworm that ate me up from the inside and left me hollow and insane and alone. And my life just ran out between my fingers like a handful of water. I couldn't. My father had a massive stroke. I was loaded on heroin the night he died. I couldn't show up at the hospital. My wife and I met each other in New York. I was acting on Broadway, and then she became very troubled from prolonged exposure to me. we became so sick that at one point a guy lent us his car, and we sold his car. I will never forget this guy's voice on the other end of the phone. He said, "You sold my car?" That's like house sitting for someone, and they come back, and you're in escrow, you know? And the alcoholic life becomes the only normal one. And when I met my wife, I was acting on Broadway. We were in our early 20s. We were having a great time. We were just having a great time. 8 years later, this was a good day in the Redmond home. I had an accident. And the doctor said, you know, I went to the hospital. He said, you've got high blood pressure. Mr. Redmond, you're going to have to lose some weight. And I said, you know what? I'd like to, but I drink alcohol and I smoke marijuana before I go to bed every night, so I'm not going to be able to. And and the doctor said, why don't I prescribe some medication for you? And I said, what a country. A great country. And he prescribed chloral hydrate for me, which is a knockout drop. It's a Mickey. It's just like getting hit with a 2x4. And I love these pills. I love them. Nancy comes home. I'm in the hallway eating handfuls of knockout drops and slamming my arms into the wall to keep myself awake so I don't have to waste a perfectly good knockout drop, because you don't want to do that. So I'm eating these pills, knocking myself, my head in the wall to stay conscious, and I finally seize, fall down, and now I'm going to bed, and now I'm incontinent like the rest of the 33-year-old men in America. I can't get up to go to the bathroom. And one night, I got up and wet the wall. And it was like a Wheaties morning the next morning. Everybody was excited. Dad, wet the wall. He's headed towards the bathroom. It's progress, not perfection. This is great. This is great. And my wife was bustling around the kitchen, made me an extra big breakfast, which I was really in the mood for. So if you're new, I want to welcome you to AA. That's what I came in here with. It's the glorious life I toted in here. By the time I got sober, my older son was 6 and my younger son was 3. When my older son was 5, he had come to me and he asked me if there was anything such as God, and I looked dead into my 5-year-old perfect baby's eyes and said no. I didn't want him to get played like a sap and a sucker like the rest of the suckers out there. I wanted my kid to have the real existential line, which every 5-year-old is famished for. And Michael was 6. He was diagnosed as being functionally retarded. His small motor skills were all screwed up. He was making this involuntary clicking noise with his throat that he couldn't stop making. He could barely read or write, and he tested in excess of 150 IQ, and there was nothing organically wrong with him. He was so disrupted from being scared all the time, he couldn't put small tasks together. Jesse was 3, and he was playing a war game and a robot game that he could not stop playing. And the conceit there was that it was just safer to be in the war that he was fashioning than the war he was living in, and it was safer to be made out of metal than to be made out of flesh and blood. My sons were warped into that horrible cycle, and our book talks about it so gorgeously, you know, the blameless lives. The warped lives of blameless wives and children. And my sons either became aggressively pursued goals that were never attained or threw in the towel and said, what the hell's the use anyway? If they got in between me and the drink, they either vanished or they became paper mache. They either disappeared or they became something less than human because I had to walk through them or around them because I was going to answer the call. How much disappearing can a baby bear before they disappear? They believe what they've been taught. On April 22nd, 1985, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I crossed a line I swore I would never cross again. What? Now, I had lots of lines. I had lots of crossings. You know, it's like I'm drawing a line in the sand. This is what... You cross it. Okay, I'm drawing another line in the sand. All right, back it up. And I was loaded on heroin the night my father died, and I had to work very quickly to not be the guy who couldn't show up for his old man the night that he died. I couldn't be that guy. I couldn't live in this world and be that guy. So I knew it was needles and heroin, and all I had to do was never put a needle in my arm again, and I wouldn't be that guy. And 13 years later, I did it again. Why? Why not? And I called my... You see, besides being Jewish, there was another reason I could not possibly have been alcoholic. I had been in psychotherapy for 18 years. I was going to be dead, but I was going to understand it. And I got absolutely no beef with psychotherapy. I've used therapy plenty in sobriety. My colossal blunder is I was trying to treat my alcoholism with psychotherapy, which is like showing up at a gunfight with a knife once a week. The idea of therapy is to uncover, discover, and unravel, to free associate, to come up with a better resolution for anxiety, for neurosis. Neurosis is an unsatisfying resolution for anxiety. In other words, your solutions are worse than your problems. Sound familiar at all? Okay, all right. Why I'm anxious? Why, Mr. Redmond? Well, I was so drunk last night, I couldn't walk, so I had to drive. Well, what are we going to do about that? I'm real anxious. Why, Mr. Redmond? Well, yesterday I sharpened a hypodermic needle on the back of a matchbook striker and sucked some heroin up through a fluffed-up cigarette filter and injected it in my body. I just feel miserable. Well, what are we going to do about that? What are you going to do about that? What do you want to do about that? Talk about it? What do you want to do? You want to talk about what I was thinking just before I got in the car to drive because I was too drunk to walk? Do you want to discuss that? Therapy can't compete with alcoholism. It can't. It's too efficient. Alcoholism's too good at what it does. It generates anxiety at such a horrific rate. You would need a panel of therapists working 24/7 just to log my stuff, just to log it, just to give it to the proper HMO, you know? How are you going to keep up? You can't keep up. Alcoholism's too damn good. And so that was another reason that I couldn't possibly have been alcoalcoholic. At any rate, on April 22nd, 1985, I put a needle in my arm again. I called my therapist of record. I told him what I had done, and he said to me, you know what? He said to me the exact same thing that Carl Jung said to the man who 12-stepped the guy who 12-stepped Bill Wilson. He said, I cannot help you. There's nothing that can be done for you. I said, what? He said, I can't help you. The only thing I can suggest is you attend a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, or we have you institutionalized. And why I went to that AA meeting, I do not know, but I did. I walked into that room in the deep San Fernando Valley at a place called Unit A. I took one look around and I said, oh my God, Alcoholics Anonymous, how did I wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous? How lame is this? This is beyond lame. This is beyond church, beyond synagogue. This is some plateau of lameness I never even imagined was available to me. Alcoholics Anonymous. And it looked to me like the room was like the product of 200 years of inbreeding in this particular room, you know? They were like identical twins carving their initials on each other's feet in the back of the room. And everything was a miracle. I'm a miracle. You're a miracle. The coffee and furniture are miracles, too. And I'm waiting for the Jew hunt to start. I know that's going to break out any minute, right? Come on, Jaime, strap these antlers on. Poke him with a stick. Knock his beanie off. Always wanted to run a big buck Jew. I hated everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that I did not know that day is that I knew exactly what my problem was, and I didn't know it. And I knew it. I knew it, and I didn't know that I knew it. I was filled with hatred against myself and you. I was absolutely terrified of everything. I was scared of everything, and I had sexual misconduct. Most of it not involving anybody else. It would have been better, really, if someone had been around. Before I got sober, Nancy and I one night, I said, was that as good for you as it was for me? And she said, I don't think this helped anybody. I mean, I could poll some people, but I don't think this did anybody any good. Now, I hated myself, and I hated you, but I hated you much more than I hated me. I'm not a suicide guy. I'm a homicide guy. That's just where I'm you first. I've always vastly preferred your death to mine, and I used to have this fantasy, this headline, said, Scott Redmond kills wife, kills children, and refuses to commit suicide. And I'm not knocking the suicide people. This is not a knock on you. It's just it's just the flip side of the same thing, really. I stuck around AA for 6 months and received the gift of step none, which is nothing. I did nothing, received nothing. Was getting dingier and dingier, and I knew I was going to drink. I had been around here 6 months, but I'd seen the AA drill hundreds and hundreds of times in just 6 months. People came in, did the work, and changed. People came in, didn't do the work, didn't change, got sick, got sicker, got to the podium, shared their gift with us, and shared their ass right out of the door, or stayed here and became columns of human sewage and sexual predators, although I judge no man. And because I'm too spiritually developed. That's why. So So I asked this guy to sponsor me, and he invited me over to his house, and he read chapter 5 to me, and he took me through the first two steps. We reached step 3 and got on our knees and said a prayer, which I felt was embarrassing and unnecessary, but I did it anyway. And he went back and he gave me instructions on how to do a fourth step from the big book of AA. I took 3 months to do my inventory. I went back to him at 9 months of sobriety. And I want to tell you, I'm going to talk about the steps now. And there's one thing I know for sure about the steps. I have absolutely no idea how you should do them. Absolutely no idea. I know how I'm doing them, how I've done them. I know what I'm looking at, the work that I'm doing with my sponsor. But I'm telling you, I have no idea. So I'm going to talk about the steps. I'm going to talk about sponsorship. And I'm going to ask you a favor. I'm going to ask you to not take anything I say as an indictment of what you're doing, because I don't know what you should do. I really don't. I do know this. The AA Big Book is exactly like the Quran, the Torah, and the Bible. You can take just about any sentence from it and use it to prove just about any point you want. And we've seen it. We see it all around us, that kind of spiritual propriety. And I don't know how it needs... I don't know the mystery of your transformation. I only know the what happened to me. You know, it's funny. You hear so many times people are called on to move and you know, move where they live and stuff, and they feel like they're being ripped out by the roots, and I understand that, because that place that I had my... I don't know why me and not them. I don't know why I had my transformation. God is absolute mystery, complete and absolute mystery. You know? So I don't know what happened to me, but it happened to me with those guys. So I want to hang out with them. And at times, I've misidentified them as the source of the transformation. And it's a mistake. And it's hurtful. I'm hurting them when I misidentify themselves. Forget about what I'm doing to me. I'm injuring them. And what this sponsor did for me is he just said, look, I am, I need someone to kick my ass. Wrong sponsor. Get another guy. I'm not going to do it. I'll tell you what, I'll do it. I'll sponsor you as much as you want to be sponsored, and I won't sponsor you as much as you don't want to be sponsored. I'll walk closer to the light with you. I'll do this work. Let's go. So I read my inventory to him at 9 months of sobriety. I did step 6 and 7 for the first time. I wrote up my 8-step list. Somebody and I were talking earlier. I try to share this anytime I talk. It's the best reading of step 8 I've ever heard. I heard it at my first home group, and I heard it when I was just a couple of weeks sober, and I've never forgotten this guy. I've never seen him since. He had a heavy New York accent. His name was Nino, and he had never read chapter 5 before. And he was reading it in front of this men's group for the first time. He had hospital plastic on his wrist, and he got up to step 8, and he read, made a list of all those we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Jesus Christ! And he looked out into the room as if to say, have you seen this? Do you know what the hell is in here? It was so beautiful. It was so pure. It's the purest reading of the step I've ever heard, because it's the only thing I saw on the list. Not those people, not that money. I would not have taken that much money if I knew I had to give it back. You think I'm a moron? If you're new, don't worry about it. It's 8 steps from where you are anyway. And it's not 8 that's annoying. It's 9. It's really annoying. So I wrote up my 8-step list. I didn't know what I was going to do about any of it. I didn't know what I was going to do about my dad and Nancy and the boys. And I was real confused. I had heard some people talking about putting themselves on their 8-step list, and I know that some people needed to be on their 8-step list, and I knew, it was very clear to me that I definitely needed to not be on my 8-step list, that I needed to be as far away from my 8-step list as I could be, because I had been so abusive and so selfish. And again, that's plenty guys I sponsor do that. You know, it's their 8-step list, it's not mine. And I didn't know what I was going to do. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Sit down with the boys and say, I'm sorry? I couldn't even get I'm sorry out of my lips. It was like a mouthful of ashes. And my sponsor, thank God for me, refused to tell me how to make amends. He said, Scott, I don't know how you're going to do this. Do your job in AA. Do your job, man. You're hanging with us. We do service. We sponsor other guys. We continue to do inventory. That's been the key for me. the continuation of the inventory process and using that as the fulcrum to pry open this stuff and continue to have the kind of transformation experience that I had when I stopped drinking. And he said, do your job in AA. And I started doing my job in Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys told Nancy and I not to get involved in our first year. And we didn't. We stayed the hell away from each other. And I had no idea how to be in a marriage. I didn't know how to fight. I would either scream until she shut up or cry until she shut up. I like that. I like the tyranny of helplessness. It's always worked for me. I also like to, I'm a loomer. I like to loom. I'm big. And I like to loom with a light behind me so I get her in a shadow, kind of. It's like total eclipse of the Jew, if I can really, like, get her in there. And if I can get, like, a scream, a cry, and a loom in a one fight, that's a hat trick. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that. I have nothing to bring to the party. Absolutely nothing. I don't even know how to clean my house. I don't feel like a grown man. I've been standing next to guys 10 years younger than me my whole life and saying, I wonder what it's like to be grown up. It's a crappy way to live. But grown men clean up after themselves. Grown men know how to make a bed. I don't even know how to make a bed. I think somewhere in the back of my twisted noodle that a certain amount of housework should equal a certain amount of sex. That there should be like conversion tables on the back of cleaning products of housework to sex. Right? That's what I think. Anytime I share that, there's at least one guy that goes, that's what I'm talking about. I'm bringing nothing to the party. And I've got to start, after I did that big house cleaning, I had to go back to the sexual inventory over and over again. Where am I being selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate, unjustifiably arousing jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? What should I be doing instead? Not what could I have done, what should I have done? What could I have done? Exactly what I did. What should I have done? A completely different deal. I didn't know that that was going to be one of my most powerful introductions to moral psychology. Because when I was being psychoanalyzed, it was uncover, discover, and confusion for me. And now what you were talking about was uncover, discover, and apply. And in the last two paragraphs on page 69, there's one of the most beautiful expressions of it. I asked God to help mold me, to help shape a sane ideal for my future life. And then it says in the last paragraph, and then I walk closer to that with him, in partnership with him. That's a mandate. That's a job. That's an incredible request that you implement this stuff. My sponsor always used to say when I finished reading a 10-step, how are you going to change now? How are you going to use it? This is not, I've never been involved in an organization that was less of a self-help group than Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and one of the things that I thought I had neatly avoided besides spirituality was I thought that maybe I would just, you know, get better and get well and get perfect and stuff. And I thought I had neatly avoided the service element, because in step three it tells me the only reason that I'm asking for relief of this self-centeredness and these defects is so that I can be of some use to another human being. And I would go back to that sexual inventory over and over again. I was not committing adultery. I was tortured, absolutely tortured about this, about the shame, about the guilt, about the difficulties, about my idea about the way Nancy and I were. One time I said to her, and by this time she really dug into Al-Anon so absolutely. And we had these insane rules in the house. My kids were only allowed to eat health food. They couldn't watch TV and couldn't curse. And so she'd give him granola for breakfast and put him in the car with me, Dr. Death, and say, hope you live. And her sponsor, Ruby, get him over to the house, give the boys a big bowl of M&M's, sit him down in front of the TV, turn on the Love Boat, and curse. One day, Ruby's husband, Milton, called the boys over. They were little boys. I'm going to say a bad word, probably the only one during the talk. And he called them over, and he said, boys, your parents don't know shit. And the kids went, oh, we've suspected, but now it's been confirmed. Man, this is so great. And he cursed. This is great. They just kept it light and polite. They lightened us up. The ice started falling away from our heart. And what started to happen, now, I'll pray with a known puppy-strangling felon in a public place. No problem. Take the third step. I don't care where we are. Hit your knees, boy. Let's go. Come on. Pray with my wife. Ooh, that's that's embarrassing and unnecessary. She's my wife, my lover, my buddy, my bride, my confidant, the person I'm making a life with. But, why would we possibly want to apply the only thing that's ever worked for me to that? So, we go to therapy. We work out great things in therapy. Come home, throw a Buick at each other. You know, just nuts. Psycho. And we finally started taking the third step together, but not formally, not with the prayer. We started holding hands and saying, Pop, can you please help us? Can you please help us to stop taking everything personally? Can you please help us to have a sense of humor? Can you please help me remember this is my lover? This is not, you know, and when we made a triangle of it, it really started to help. One day we were in a car, and my wife's Al-Anon family, they have a saying they're fond of using, which I'm sure a lot of other people use, but they like to use it. If we'll get into something, my wife would say to me, perhaps, you know, honey, you could be right. And so we're in the car, we're getting into it, and my wife says, you know, sweetheart, you could be right, but not today. Not today. I'm sure sometime in the future that'll happen. Not now. I had a lot of dreams when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been a professional writer and a director for years. It was a big deal for me. And I had a ghostwriting job at 20th Century Fox when I came in, and kind of kept doing that through my first year. And at the end of my first year of sobriety, a company in L.A. made an overture to me to direct a situation comedy. And I had started sponsoring guys by this time. I was sort of becoming a spiritual Goliath. And I thought if I had gotten this job directing the sitcom, big-time comedy directing job, it would really help the guys I sponsor out because they'd see me prosper. It would be so good for them. I went nuts. I mean, I just went nuts. I wanted this job. There was a company picnic. I went to it. Executive producer offered me a beer, and I picked it up and almost drank it. And I went back to my sponsor. I was humiliated. I said, I just couldn't believe it. And he said, you know what? First of all, you better do the inventory. You know, I was resentful of myself for almost drinking, and they didn't give me the job. I was resentful at them for not giving me the job. And I had to write that inventory. I'm resentful at Scott for almost drinking. It affects my self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, and sex. Now, resentment's no big deal. It's just the source of all spiritual illness, the great destroyer of all alcoholics. It'll take you out, cut you off from the sunlight of the spirit, and kill your ass dead. But don't be alarmed. It's no big deal. It's not a big deal. See, because I don't just dislike stuff. I don't just dislike it. I don't experience that. You know, if you're new, I want to share with you what used to be my favorite sentence in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new here, it could be your favorite sentence, too. It starts on the bottom of page 65 and it goes to the top of 66. And what they're doing is,